Welcome, welcome, you living legends. To all my listeners that have returned, double welcome. And to all my new listeners, welcome to the place where you're going to find all things creepy and spooky. With a little bit of silliness. Today's episode is quite unique, just like you lot, where I'm going to be sharing two stories put forward in the vote on my Patreon page. Last week was the symbols in cold water, and the ending was a bit of a cliffhanger. So what I decided to do was put a poll up on my Patreon page, accessible by everyone, and listeners could vote on how they wanted the story to end. Now, I got a mixed number of votes put through, and two stood out, right? And that was for Jacob to fight the good fight, but also Jacob to lose the fight. So I decided to include both, because you know what? Why not? And a big, big thank you to all those that voted. I just love seeing my legends put forward what they actually wanted to see in the story and help direct the fate. Especially the comments as to why they voted the way that they did. That's always lovely to read. I get a bit of an insight to my listeners' psyche. Also, I'm dedicating this episode to Matthew Bauer, which is the first set of chapters of a creepy, creepy story. I won't ruin anything, but it's got romance, it's got some violence, it's got some mystery. Either way, you're in for a treat. Custom written by myself, yours truly, for the amazing legend that is Matthew Bauer, a superstar and a friend of mine. So strap yourself in for a wombo combo of an episode. An early release as well. So all of my episodes, by the way, that are dedicated to Patreon supporters are always going to be an early release. As a special thank you to all listeners. So, turn the lights off, the sound up, get comfortable, and drink a delicious cup of Earl Grey tea with me. Or a coffee, if that's what you like. Let the stories begin. Chapter 6, The Maw of the Portal. The swirling mass of blood and sand inside the portal pulsed in time with Jacob's racing heartbeat. He could feel the presence within it, a dark, insidious force that gnawed at the edges of his sanity. It was alive, hungry, and it wanted him. The ground beneath him trembled, slick with congealed blood and the shattered remains of human bones. The air was thick with the scent of iron and rot, making each breath feel like a mouthful of decay. Jacob stumbled closer, his legs moving against his will, dragged forward by the magnetic pull of the maw. The whispers in his mind grew louder, more distinct, like the scraping of claws against his skull. They weren't words, but sensations, terror, agony, an overwhelming desire to consume. The ground beneath him was soft and wet, sinking beneath his feet as he was drawn toward the heart of the portal. The fleshy landscape around him heaved and shifted as if the very earth was breathing. Twisted shapes moved in the shadows, skittering along the edges of his vision, half-formed creatures, their limbs jerking in unnatural spasms. He knew he was at the epicenter of the Maw's power. This was where it had anchored itself, where it fed on the town's rot and decay. Jacob's vision blurred, his mind teetering on the brink of madness as he approached the heart of the Maw, a massive, pulsating structure made of bone, sinew, and blood. It beat like a living heart, the sound echoing through the air, like the deep, resonant tolling of a funeral bell. He realized, with a sickening certainty, that he had only two choices: fight the force that pulled at him, or give in to its horrific embrace. So here's chapter 6A, titled The Horrific Transformation. The pull was too strong. Jacob's body moved forward on its own accord, his legs dragging through the slick, fleshed ground, his arms hanging limp at his sides. He tried to resist, tried to force himself back, but it was like struggling against the tide of an ocean made of tar. The whispers in his head grew louder, more insistent, filling his mind with a cacophony of dark, twisted desires. His thoughts were no longer his own. They were drowned out by the voices of the Moor. A voice that did not speak but felt, its intentions seeping into his very bones. Jacob dropped to his knees, the ground beneath him warm and wet, like the inside of a living creature. The flesh of the earth pulsed beneath his hands, and he realized, with a start, that it wasn't just the ground. It was his own body that was pulsing, vibrating in time with the portal's rhythm. He looked down at his hands, horrified to see the skin bulging, splitting open along deep, dark lines. The pain was immediate and intense, a searing, white-hot agony that shot through every nerve in his body. Jacob screamed, his voice ragged and broken, but the sound was swallowed by the pulsing roar of the Moor. His fingers elongated, the bones snapping and splintering as they stretched, the flesh tearing apart to reveal thick, chitinous claws beneath. His skin sloughed off in wet, meaty strips, exposing a slick black carapace that glistened in the blood-soaked light of the portal. Jacob's spine arced violently, the vertebrae cracking and reshaping as a hard, segmented shell burst through his back. He felt the bones in his legs shatter and reform, his thighs splitting open like ripe fruit, spilling blood and muscle onto the ground. New limbs sprouted from the wounds, thin and insectoid, covered in bristling hairs and ending in hooked, serrated talons, grippers to catch onto prey. His mouth split open, the flesh tearing apart at the corners as a pair of mandibles erupted from his jaw, snapping together with a sickening click. The transformation was brutal, agonizing. He could feel every bone breaking, every muscle tearing itself apart to reshape his body into something alien, something monstrous. His vision blurred, then sharpened, his eyes bulging out of their sockets and splitting open to reveal dozens of black, multifaceted lenses. He could see everything now, the shifting, pulsating landscape of the Moor, the writhing forms of half-formed creatures skittering in the shadows, the blood-soaked ground writhing like a living thing. Jacob tried to scream again, but the sound that came from his throat was a wet, guttural hiss. His thoughts were no longer coherent, his human mind collapsing under the weight of the transformation. He could feel the Moor's influence flooding his brain, erasing the last remnants of his humanity. He wasn't Jacob anymore. He was something else, something born of the Moor's dark, insatiable hunger. His new limbs twitched and jerked, the insectoid talons scraping against the ground as he skittered forward, drawn inexorably towards the heart of the Moor. He could feel its power coursing through him, filling him with a ravenous, unending hunger. The whispers in his mind were no longer separate from his own thoughts. They were his thoughts. A constant, insistent chant of consume, devour, destroy. The portal pulsed one last time, and Jacob, no longer a man but the chittering insectoid abomination, lunged into its heart, disappearing into the swirling mass of sand and blood. The last trace of humanity was gone. The Moor had claimed him. Chapter 6b, The Escape. Jacob's body trembled on the edge of the portal, his mind filled with a cold, overwhelming terror. The whispers clawed at his thoughts, pulling him deeper into the darkness. But somewhere deep inside, a spark of defiance remained. He was not ready to die. He would not let this ancient, ravenous void consume him. With a guttural scream, Jacob wrenched himself back, stumbling away from the edge of the portal. The force that pulled at him surged, wrapping around his limbs like invisible chains, but he fought against it, digging his heels into the blood-soaked earth. The whispers in his head grew louder, shrieking in fury, but Jacob focused on a single blinding thought: survival. He scanned the landscape, his eyes wild and desperate, until he saw it, the heart of the moor, a throbbing mass of bone and flesh pulsating at the center of this nightmarish world. He knew instinctively that it was the source of the moor's power. If he could destroy it, he might be able to sever its connection to the physical world, to collapse the portal and escape. The ground beneath him quaked as he ran, the blood-slick earth squelching under his boots. The half-formed creatures in the shadows lunged at him, their twisted limbs reaching out with clawed fingers. Jacob dodged to the side, slashing at one with a broken shard of bone he had ripped from the ground. The creature let out a wet, gurgling scream as it crumpled, its body dissolving into a puddle of black ichor. He reached the heart of the moor, his chest heaving, his body slick with sweat and blood. The pulsating mass throbbed violently, the bone structure cracking and shifting as it tried to defend itself. Jacob didn't hesitate. He drove that shard of bone into the heart with all his strength, plunging it deep into the throbbing, fleshy core. The effect was immediate. The entire world around him convulsed, the ground splitting open as a wave of dark energy erupted from the heart. Jacob was thrown back, slamming into the ground as the landscape around him began to collapse. The half-formed creatures shrieked, their bodies disintegrating into ash as the moor's power was severed. The sky above cracked open, shards of darkness falling like shattered glass, revealing the dim grey light of the real world beyond. Jacob scrambled to his feet, the portal collapsing in on itself, the swirling sand and blood swirling faster and faster, sucked back into the gaping void. He sprinted towards the fading light, every muscle in his body screaming in pain. But he didn't stop. He couldn't stop. With one final leap, Jacob hurled himself through the collapsing portal, the edges of the moor snapping shut behind him like the jaws of a ravenous beast. He landed hard on the forest floor, the breath knocked out of him. For a moment, he lay there, gasping for air, his vision blurred. The world around him was quiet, the oppressive silence of cold water replaced by the gentle rustling of leaves, the soft song of birds in the distance. He had made it. He was alive. But as Jacob lay there, staring up at the canopy of trees, a single thought crept into his mind, colder and darker than the void he'd escaped from. The moor was gone. For now. But it wasn't dead. It was only sleeping, waiting for its next victim, its next feeding ground, and somewhere in some other forgotten place, its whispers had already begun. Jacob struggled to his feet, every part of his body aching, but he knew he couldn't stay here. He had escaped the moor, but he couldn't escape its memory. He was marked now, a survivor of something ancient and insatiable, and the darkness would never truly let him go. He turned and walked away, the whispers still faint in the back of his mind, a reminder of the hungry void that waited just beyond the edge of reality. And so ends Jacob's fight for survival in cold water, at least for now. Thank you for the lovelies that voted to change the fate of this story and create a spin-off or a split-off. I'm so glad that I got a chance to do both stories, especially when there was so much interest for both. So thank you very, very, very much. And now on to our next story, because the last one was sort of a special thank you to all you legends out there for listening. This next story is going to be altogether quite different, but no spoilers, so strap yourself in and get ready for a ride. Enjoy. Chapter 1. The Enchantment. The moonlight kissed the hills like a gentle lover, its silver beams bleeding into the mist that blanketed the valley. The wind whispered tales of forgotten love and ancient hunger as it danced through the bare branches of the willow tree. In the distance, nestled against the craggy silhouette of the Carpathian peaks, stood a solitary manor, a dark edifice of stone and shadow. There was a coldness to the air that had little to do with the crisp autumn evening. It was the kind of chill that crept into a man's bones and whispered secrets of the grave. Alexander felt it before he saw him. The sensation was subtle at first, like the faint breath of winter in the middle of summer, or the lingering scent of roses when no flowers bloomed. It made his heart stutter, then race, a shiver running up his spine. He was alone in his modest cottage, reading by the light of a single flickering candle. The fire in the hearth had died down to embers, casting long, dancing shadows across the walls. It began a month ago, when Alexander first met him. It was at the edge of the forest, where the moonlight filtered through the dense canopy in narrow streams, casting a spectral glow on the forest floor. Alexander had ventured there against his better judgment, drawn by a strange, irresistible urge he could not explain. He had seen a figure standing in the shadows, a man, tall and elegant, with raven black hair and a face as pale as moonlight. "My, what a fine young gentleman has wandered into my domain," the stranger had said, his voice deep and velvety, like the first sip of rich red wine. Alexander could not speak. He was transfixed by the stranger's eyes, deep, bottomless pools of obsidian, as if they held the night sky within them. "Do you not wish to know my name?" the man asked, a wry smile curling his lips. I do," Alexander managed to whisper, his breath visible in the sudden chill. "I am Lord Marius Valmont, the keeper of this forsaken place." He stepped closer, the shadows clinging to him like a cloak. "And you, my dear, have been chosen." From that night forward, Alexander's life was no longer his own. Lord Valmont visited him in the dark hours when the world was hushed and the moon hung heavy in the sky. They spoke for hours of dreams and desires, of love and the eternity it promises. The Lord's touch was cold, but it sent a wave of heat through Alexander's body. He felt seen in a way he'd never been before, understood at a depth that frightened and thrilled him. And then there were the nights when Marius did not speak. Those were the nights of shadows and desire, when Alexander felt the icy kiss of Fang against his neck, the piercing sweetness of the bite, and the euphoric haze that followed. He would awaken with the memories of Marius's mouth on his lips, the taste of copper on his tongue, and a dull ache in his veins. Alexander did not resist. He could not. He had never felt such love, such devotion. It was as if he was drowning in the depths of the ocean, yet for the first time in his life, he did not want to breathe. Tonight, as the candle sputtered out, he felt the familiar pull, a magnetic force drawing him to the window. Outside, the forest was alive with a whispering wind. He saw Marius standing in the shadow of the trees, watching him with a smirk that held the promise of eternity. "Come to me, Alexander." Marius' voice echoed in his mind, a seductive caress that made his pulse quicken. Alexander's heart beat wildly against his ribs as he stepped out into the night, barefoot and unthinking, moving toward the one he could never resist. Chapter 2: The Detective Arrives. The clamor of the iron wheels ceased as the train pulled into the station, releasing a cloud of hissing steam that curled and clawed through the cold morning air. The town of Varasati was a modest place. Unremarkable in most respects, just a scattering of cobblestone streets and weather-beaten cottages huddled under the shadow of the distant Carpathian range. It was the kind of town that lingered in silence, as if the very earth carried an ancient burden, whispering secrets to those who dared to listen. Detective Nathaniel Ward disembarked, his leather boots crunching on the frosty gravel. He was a man of stature, his shoulders broad and his demeanor rigid. He wore a long coat, its dark fabric draped elegantly over his strong frame, and a black felt hat, tilted just enough to cast a shadow over his chiseled face. His eyes, a cold and calculating blue, swept across the station as he lit a cigarette, the flame illuminating the fine, weathered lines of his stern expression. Nathaniel had seen many places like this, where the people spoke in hushed tones and the children huddled close to their mother's skirts. There was a pervasive air of unease, a heaviness that clung to the damp fog rolling off the hills. He flicked the ash from his cigarette, taking a moment to glance at the worn piece of paper in his hand, crumpled, stained, but still legible. "Missing persons," it read, with a list of names beneath, each one crossed out in pencil, save for the last. Marcus Havel. A young man last seen at the edge of the forest 3 weeks ago. The townsfolk had been sending telegrams for weeks, their pleas almost nonsensical, laced with hysteria and superstition. "The devil himself walks these woods," one message had read. Another spoke of a darkness older than the town. But Nathaniel was not a man given to fantasy. He believed in facts, in evidence, in the tangible pieces of a case he could see and feel. Ghost stories did not solve murders. His steady aim and unyielding logic did. He made his way to the center of town, the clattering sound of horse-drawn carriages and the distant call of a rooster piercing the morning air. The fog clung to the rooftops, reluctant to lift, casting everything in a muted, ethereal light. He approached the town square, where a small gathering of villagers had congregated around the fountain. They looked like spectres, their faces drawn and gaunt.
"Detective Ward, I presume,"
came a voice rough as sandpaper. Nathaniel turned to see a stout man in a grey wool coat, his face lined with the weight of many, many sleepless nights.
"Yes,"
Nathaniel replied curtly, slipping the piece of paper back into his pocket.
"I was sent by the city constabulary. It appears your town has a problem."
The man's eyes flickered nervously to the edge of the forest, where the fog seemed thicker, as if it were an extension of the darkness lurking within.
"Aye, you could say that,"
he muttered, pulling his coat collar, as if trying to ward off a chill.
"People have been going missing, one after another. First it was the drifters, then some of our own. There's talk of a creature."
"Spare me the legends,"
Nathaniel cut him off, his voice sharp.
"I need facts. When was the last disappearance?" 3 weeks ago,"
the man replied, swallowing hard.
"Marcus Havel, young lad, barely 20. His family distraught. He went walking near the forest edge one evening and never returned. Same as the others."
Nathaniel took a deep breath, the air tasting metallic, like the scent of fresh spilled blood.
"Take me to his family,"
he ordered. The man hesitated.
They're not well, detective. His mother has taken ill, and his father... I need to speak with them,"
Nathaniel insisted, a cold finality in his voice. They walked Through the narrow streets, the cobblestones slick with dew. Nathaniel noticed the way the villagers averted their eyes, crossing themselves as they passed. A woman hurriedly dragged her child indoors, slamming the door shut. He felt the hairs on the back of his neck rise, a primal response to the pervasive, oppressive fear that hung in the air like smoke. They arrived at a small, dilapidated cottage. The door creaked open, revealing a man slumped in a chair, staring blankly at the wall. His eyes were hollow, deep shadows, as if he had not slept in days. The room was dimly lit, the scent of incense and sickness hanging heavy in the air.
"I'm sorry to intrude,"
Nathaniel began, his tone softer now.
"I'm here to help find your son."
The man looked up, his gaze unfocused, as if he was seeing something beyond the room.
"He's gone,"
he whispered, his voice breaking.
"The forest took him. It takes them all."
Nathaniel knelt down, looking into the man's eyes.
"Tell me what happened."
The father shuddered, clutching a silver cross around his neck.
"He was relentless, like he was being called. He said he'd heard a voice, soft as silk, calling his name in the wind. He went to the forest that night and we never saw him again."
Nathaniel felt a prickling sensation, a sense of something dark and ancient lurking just beyond the veil of the mundane world.
"A voice, you say?"
he asked, his own voice tinged with an uncharacteristic uncertainty.
"Aye,"
the man rasped.
"A voice like the devil himself. And when the moon is full, I swear, I see a shadow standing at the forest edge, watching our home. It's not a man. It's something else."
Nathaniel stood, his jaw set. He did not believe in ghosts or devils, but he could not deny the fear in the man's voice. It was a fear rooted in something real, something that had cast a shadow over this town. He stepped outside, the fog swirling around his legs like grasping fingers. He took a long drag from his cigarette and exhaled slowly, watching the smoke curl into the mist. Whatever was happening here, it was not mere superstition. There was something in those woods, and he was determined to find it.
Chapter 3. A Dance of Shadows in the Streets.
The fog clung to the cobblestone streets of Virasati like the grasping fingers of the dead, muffling the sound of footfalls and casting a veil of unreality over the town. Lanterns flickered in their iron brackets, casting pools of pale light that barely penetrated the mist. Somewhere in the distance, a clock tower struck midnight, its chimes echoing through the empty alleyways like a funeral toll. Detective Nathaniel Ward moved through the streets with a sense of purpose, his hands resting lightly on the butt of his revolver. The town seemed to grow more silent with each step, the whispers of the fog becoming more pronounced, like voices just out of reach. He could feel the weight of eyes on him. From the darkened windows, the villagers were peering out, fearful and suspicious of the outsider in their midst. The events of the morning had unsettled him more than he would care to admit. There was something in the grief-stricken father's voice, a raw, primal fear that Nathaniel had encountered only rarely in his career. Usually in the eyes of the condemned, as they faced the gallows, he had seen enough to know that whatever haunted this town was not merely the product of superstition. His footsteps brought him to the edge of the town square, where the ancient stone fountain bubbled with a thin trickle of water. The statue at its center, worn by centuries of rain and wind, depicted a winged angel with a sorrowful expression. Its stone eyes turned heavenward, as if pleading for mercy. Nathaniel paused, lighting another cigarette, and exhaled a cloud of smoke that drifted upwards to mingle with the mist. From the corner of his eye, he saw a figure standing across the square, half shrouded in shadow. It was a man, tall and thin, with the silhouette of a slender face illuminated briefly by the flickering gaslight. The stranger's clothes were elegant, almost anachronistic. A long coat draped over his shoulders like a cloak, and his dark hair was slicked back, glinting in the dim light. Nathaniel narrowed his eyes, studying the man. He seemed out of place here, a spectre in the night.
"Good evening, sir,"
Nathaniel called out, stepping closer. The fog parted before him like the opening curtains of a stage play. The man turned slowly, his movements deliberate, and smiled, a smile that was all sharp lines and glacial politeness.
"Good evening, Detective Ward,"
he replied, his voice a smooth baritone that seemed to resonate in the air as if he was speaking directly into Nathaniel's mind. Nathaniel felt a jolt of unease. He had not introduced himself. He kept his face impassive, though his hand instinctively drifted closer to his revolver.
"You seem to know me, but I don't recall having the pleasure of your acquaintance."
The stranger inclined his head, a gesture almost too graceful, as though he were performing a practiced bow.
"Oh, I know much about you, Detective. Your reputation precedes you, sharp as a blade, unyielding as stone."
He stepped forward, his features coming into clearer focus. The man's skin was pale, almost unnaturally so, like moonlight captured in human form. His eyes were dark, fathomless pools that seemed to pull at Nathaniel's very soul.
"And you are?"
Nathaniel pressed, unwilling to show his discomfort.
"My name is Lord Marius Valmont,"
the man replied, his lips curling into a smile that was more predatory than friendly.
"I am something of a guardian of this town, you might say."
"A guardian?" Nathaniel echoed, skepticism creeping into his voice.
"Then you must be aware of the disappearances. I was told the forest has become a place of fear, and yet here you are, strolling about it as if you own it."
Marius chuckled, a sound that was rich and unsettling, like the rustle of dead leaves in an empty crypt.
"Fear is a funny thing, Detective. It thrives in the unknown, in the shadows we refuse to face. I assure you, whatever haunts this place is quite old and quite formidable."
Nathaniel took a step closer, the cigarette burning down to his fingertips. He felt the urge to look away from those eyes, but he forced himself to hold the vampire's gaze.
"If you're so as well informed as you seem, then perhaps you can tell me what happened to Marcus Havel."
"Marcus?"
Marius tilted his head slightly, as if recalling a fond memory.
"Ah, the poor boy. So full of life, yet so terribly lost. He wandered where he should not have. And the forest, well, it has a way of claiming what it desires."
Nathaniel's patience was wearing thin. He dropped the cigarette and crushed it under his boot, stepping even closer, his voice a low growl.
"Do not speak in riddles with me, Lord Valmont. If you know something about his disappearance, you'd best tell me now."
The vampire's smile faded, replaced by a look of almost genuine sorrow.
"Detective Ward, I fear you are meddling in matters far beyond your comprehension. This town, its people, the forest itself, they're all part of a much larger tapestry, woven with threads of blood and darkness. Pull too hard, and you may unravel something best left intact."
Before Nathaniel could respond, a figure emerged from the mist behind Marius. A young man with disheveled blonde hair and eyes that seemed to shimmer with an unnatural light. It was Alexander, the vampire's thrall. He wore a loose shirt, its collar open to reveal the pale skin of his throat, marred by twin puncture wounds, barely healed.
"Alexander,"
Marius said softly without turning. The young man stepped forward, his movements almost mechanical, like a marionette on strings. Nathaniel felt a pang of recognition, though he couldn't place why. The boy's face seemed familiar, but it was the vacant, haunted look in his eyes that struck him most. A look he had seen in the eyes of men who had been broken, their spirits crushed under some terrible weight.
"Is this one of your wards, Lord Valmont?"
Nathaniel asked, his voice colder now.
"In a manner of speaking,"
Marius replied. He placed a hand on Alexander's shoulder, the gesture possessive and tender.
"The young have a way of finding me when they're lost. I provide them with guidance, with comfort."
"Comfort," Nathaniel repeated, his tone edged with disbelief.
"You call this comfort?
The boy looks like he's seen the gates of hell." Marius' eyes flashed, a brief, dangerous glint.
"Perhaps he has, but you, Detective Ward, are standing at the threshold as well. Tell me, do you truly wish to cross it?"
Nathaniel's hand went to his revolver, his fingers brushing the cold metal. He did not draw it, but the threat was implicit. Alexander stepped forward suddenly, his voice low and pleading.
"Please, sir, you must leave. He doesn't want you here."
The words sent a chill down Nathaniel's spine.
"Who doesn't want me here?"
Alexander's eyes flicked to Marius, then back to Nathaniel. He swallowed hard, as if fighting to form the words.
The darkness, it knows you're here, and it won't let you leave." "That's enough, Alexander,"
Marius said sharply, his voice like the crack of a whip. He turned back to Nathaniel, his expression once again calm and composed.
"I suggest you take the boy's advice, Detective. There are forces at work here that you cannot hope to understand."
Nathaniel's grip on his revolver tightened, but he forced himself to take a step back. He could feel the pressure building in his chest, a sensation that was entirely foreign to him. Fear. Not of the man before him, but of something unseen, lurking just beyond the veil of fog.
"I will find out what's happening here,"
he said quietly, his voice laced with resolve.
"And when I do, I promise you, there will be justice."
Marius inclined his head, as if in mock salute.
"Justice?"
he echoed, his smile widened.
"Ah, yes. We shall see."
With that, the vampire turned, pulling Alexander into the fog with him. The two figures melted into the mist, vanishing like specters into the night. Nathaniel stood alone in the square, the cold air biting into his skin. He had come here seeking answers, but he had only found more questions, and a creeping sense of dread that gnawed at the edges of his mind. He turned and walked back towards his lodgings, the fog swirling around him like a shroud. He knew now that he was no longer merely hunting a killer. He was facing something far more ancient, far more dangerous. And he was not sure he would survive it. And so ends chapter 3, a story dedicated to my awesome, awesome friend, Matt O'Star. I hope you're loving the very beginnings of this tale, and I will be continuing this next week, where I can't wait to jump into chapter 4, titled The Moon's Hungry Eye. Legends, thank you for listening. If you like what I do and have the capacity to support the podcast, aka myself, me, the tale teller, visit my Patreon, which is www.patreon.com/sfgt. And you can support me for as much as a cup of tea or coffee a month. It really goes a long way because it goes right back into paying authors, supporting others that do old-time radio archives, and pretty much I always try and find a way to give back to the community. Also, if supporting with dollary dues is just not an option, and understandably so, if you have 2 minutes to swing over to iTunes and leave a review, that would be a godsend. I'm sure you know why, but I appreciate every single one of those reviews that comes my way. So thank you in advance very, very, very much. Now I want to thank the amazing supporters that keep this show bubbling along and the podcast lights not only alight, but blindingly so. My first amazing, jaw-dropping, brilliant friend and supporter is Matt O'Star. My Ode Night Tea Titan. My goodness, what can I say about this amazing soul? Not only sending lovely comments whilst I was away in Japan for a month, reaching out to me via email, wishing me well, honestly could not ask for a better pal. Really, Matto Star, you are an absolute legend and I really mean it. Thank you for your never-ending, bottomless kindness and support. You're a superstar. And reading through your comments just today, this morning actually, in Patreon, made my day. And honestly, it supercharges my recordings, because it reminds me that people really enjoy it, and it entertains them. So thank you so much, Matto. You're an absolute legend, and I double dedicate this episode to you, and the next episode coming as well. But Dudio, I hope you really enjoy this. I'm really tailoring this story for you. If you have any feedback, any changes you would like made, or any ideas on the direction you would like it, you know what to do, right? Give me a tap on the shoulder and say, Telltale, I like more of this, or I want more of this. And that really goes for anyone that supports me at this tier, or any of the tiers above Earl Grey and Forces. Because I genuinely listen to feedback, and I apply it right away. I like to think that I might be one of the few podcasters that do that. Anyway, I digress. Thank you so much, you superstar, Matto Star. Have a wonderful week ahead of you. And thankful to call you my friend. Now onto my two amazing white tier warlords, Lazookasaurus Rex, my Halloween-loving, 100-kilogram-plus bench-pressing colossus of a man. Lizza, I hope you're doing fantastic, buddy. Thank you so much for your support. You know where it goes. It goes right back into the podcast when it comes to sound effects and audio. Every single episode has custom-made music. You will not hear the same music twice in another episode. I'm creating them and crafting them every single week. All thanks to support from yourself, where I don't even have to think about the dollar dues that goes behind it. I can just focus on making fun and creepy content. So thank you, Lezza. You are a superstar as well. Need I say more? My muscle-bound friend. Cheers, mate. I hope you have a great, great week. And Joseph Schroeder, my zombie-loving, family-focused, brilliant man. I hope, Joseph, you're having a fantastic weekend. And rest assured, knowing that you love zombies, I am going to make sure that I include, in some capacity, some zombie creepy tales, okay? I promise you this. And thank you so much for reaching out to me whenever you can. I really appreciate it. So I hope you have a brilliant week ahead, Joseph. Thank you so much. And of course, I want to say a huge thank you to my Earl Grey enforcers. I'm lucky to have Jessica Garcia, Michael Krupp, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, Paige Kramer, Divided by Zero, Juicebox Andy, Just Heather, Peter Raffaelli, and Chad Warren. What a bunch of legends. Now, listeners, if you're still listening, thank you very much. This will be an early release, while after next week, I'll be going back to the routine where patrons get it about a week early. So patrons would get it on the Sunday or Monday, whilst in general, listeners would get this episode on a Friday of that same week. Patrons also get the bonus of 320 kilobytes per second, and of course, my eternal gratitude. So mates, I will catch you next week, either Monday or Friday. Have a brilliant week ahead of yourselves. Stay safe, and I'm going to leave you with my custom-made musical outro. Have a brilliant week. Love yous, and catch you soon for more creepy. Till next we meet.
Night whispers, secrets untold, ghostly tales centuries old. In the shadows, mysteries unfold. Listeners gather brave and bold. Stories, fables, ghostly tales. In every shadow, a truth unveils. As the night around us prevails, every whisper, secret sails. Unseen, draw near. Blurring lines between what's clear, between the real and what appears. In the night's embrace we find tales that haunt. tales, forever blind, forever, forever, forever. Thanks for listening, legends. Thank you to our patrons and supporters. And a huge shout out to Matt Astar, Lesosaurus, and Joseph. Have a great week.